You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, before the election, the Republican Party was fractured between supporters of Donald Trump and those who were staunchly against him. Our guest says healing the rift is priority number one. First, human trafficking might seem like something that happens in far-off places and happens to other people, but our next guest shares her own story as a survivor of sex trafficking to raise awareness that it could happen in any community and to any person. Teresa Flores is a human trafficking survivor, author, and victims advocate, and she's the keynote speaker at an event tomorrow in Green Bay. Teresa, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, you were trafficked for sex when you were only 15 years old. First of all, would you describe your life before the trafficking and what it was like for you growing up?
Yeah, I consider myself having just been a normal, average, all-American girl. Two parents, my mom didn't work, three younger brothers, Irish Catholic, and I would say upper middle class. And just was a good family. I wasn't molested or abused, anything like that. I had a normal upbringing. And what made my life a little different than maybe most of the listeners is that I moved around every 2 years. My dad was a big executive, so he would get promoted and transferred. And so I didn't have really a lot of support around me. I didn't have any family that lived near us. And so I would just get kind of used to an area and then get uprooted again. So that's what kind of made my life a little different than most people's.
So how did the trafficking start?
You know, I just simply moved to a new place that I hadn't, you know, lived before, a little different than in the past, very upper class. And I just met a boy. I mean, it was just very innocent. It was in my high school, and my parents were pretty strict and didn't allow me to date until I was 16. And this boy was a lot different than any of the other boys that I kind of grew up with. He was very suave, very sweet talker, very, very cute. And just, for 6 months, really, he was always around and giving me compliments. We call that, you know, we can call that courting, but if it's a malintent, it's actually grooming. And so he would you know, offer to walk me to class and everything. And so it seemed very innocent to me. And here I am, you know, very naive. And one day he just asked me if I wanted a ride home from school. It was as simple as that.
And what happened at that point?
So I jumped at the chance. I thought, you know, this is not a date. We're fine. And so I went with him thinking that he was going to take me home. But unfortunately, he didn't. He said he had forgotten something at his house and said, I just need to run there and grab it. And I had an odd feeling. Something felt wrong, but I didn't, you know, want to be weird. And I wanted him to like me. And so I thought, okay, we'll just swing by his house. But we went to his house and he asked me to come inside. He gave me a pop and it was laced with drugs. Mm. And then I was raped. And when I went home that afternoon after that, I made a really bad decision. I decided not to tell my parents. And I thought at the moment it was a good decision because I didn't want them to see me differently, to be angry that I went with him. I felt just very ashamed of it. And I had been a virgin. And unfortunately, a few days later, it got worse because he came up to me at school with an envelope, and in that envelope were pictures.
And so he blackmailed you.
Yeah, his two older brothers had been there taking the photos and then said, you know, we'll show these to your father, his boss, all around school, the church, you know, that I was involved in, and said, you have to do what we say when we say, or we're going to show these to everyone.
It sounds like a situation, the way it started, that you can see happening very easily to, you know, any girl who had an interest, you know, with a cute boy who was giving her attention. And yet it took this really dark and horrible turn. So at that point, why did you decide not to tell your parents what was happening and expose the blackmail and these three brothers?
Well, first of all, you got to remember, you know, I was 15. And so part of it was because of the blackmail that I didn't want them to know. But a bigger part of it was that they threatened to kill my family. Mm. They said, we're going to hurt your brothers. And there are a lot of people in town who are afraid of these guys. So it was kind of what you might call like your upper class gang. And so the teachers at school, everybody was very afraid of them. And they would follow me home from school when I was walking with my brother, or they would come to where I worked at and just stood in the door. So they were very, very threatening as well, physically and emotionally.
I'm so sorry for what you went through. Hearing this, I mean, I know it's been a long time, but I can't imagine that the pain ever totally goes away. What made you decide to come out with this and tell people what you'd been through?
So about 10 years ago, actually it's 10 years this month, I went to a conference in Columbus, Ohio, where I'm from, and I learned about the definition of human trafficking. And I sat there in that chair, and I was just stunned because I thought, oh my gosh, this is what happened to me. I never knew it was called this. And, you know, here I have a master's degree. So I'm a licensed social worker. And I thought, if I don't know this and I lived through it, how many others don't know this too? And my daughter was actually turning the age of what I had been when I had been first trafficked. And I thought, I've got to open my mouth. And we didn't have strong laws against it in Ohio. And I walked right up to a senator and said, you know, maybe the people that are voting on laws will listen to me because I look like an average American kid, you know, person now, and maybe they'll listen to my story. And from that moment, I never turned back.
We're talking with Teresa Flores right now. She's a human trafficking survivor, also an author and a victim's advocate, and she's a keynote speaker at an event tomorrow in Green Bay. There's a link, by the way, up about that on the Central Time Facebook page. And Teresa, listening to you talk, I can imagine that one assumption people may make about human trafficking, one, is that it doesn't happen in my community. That's, you know, something that happens in some sort of seedy part of the country that I've never been to. I don't mm-hmm. know, some place we don't think about. Another is that maybe it just happens to girls. What are some of the assumptions that we make like that?
Well, 80% are women and girls, but there are 20% that are men and boys. The FBI has told us that we know for sure there's 100,000 kids being trafficked in the U.S. right now. So that means 20,000 boys as well. So this is not a small problem that we have. You know, there are a lot of generational prostitution and for drugs in the inner city and with minorities for labor trafficking. But this is something that we're seeing all across the country, even a lot in the rural areas as well.
Now, you're the keynote speaker at this event tomorrow morning in mm-hmm. Green Bay, and some of the points that organizers have emphasized are that trafficking can happen in smaller urban communities like those in Northeast Wisconsin, and that large-scale events, sometimes football games, Packers games, the EAA can create demand for sex traffickers. And I think that might be something that comes as a shock to some people. What do you think the connection is there? What do people need to know about that?
Yeah, I have a program called SOAP, which stands for Save Our Adolescents from Prostitution. And we go out during big sporting events and any event where they bring a lot of people to a town. And we look for missing children. A lot of time these missing and runaway kids are being trafficked. And we talk to hotels and motels about this to see if they know what the signs are if somebody walks in that's being trafficked. We just know that during big events like this, the demand for sex for sale rises. I mean, it quadruples. There's an internet site called Backpage.com. It's similar to Craigslist, but you can actually buy a person on Backpage. And we track that during events like the Packer games, and we go to the Super Bowl every year. And we know that those ads for girls for sale, which many of them are not doing this by choice, they're being posted on there by a pimp or a trafficker, and they quadruple during any big event.
Teresa, what do you want people to know about what to look for, the signs of human trafficking, so that they can intervene and hopefully help?
There's just so many. You know, gosh, young girls that are inappropriately dressed, maybe out late at night on a school night, hanging around older guys. We had a group go out to a hotel on a Saturday afternoon and noticed a young African-American girl, about 15 or 16, kind of all made up, walking into the motel with this older, you know, 50, 60-year-old white guy. And we know that that's what that was. We've seen one guy dropping off four girls to a hotel and leaving them there to work. So those are just some of the signs. There's so many of them. It just depends on what kind of situation you're in.
What kind of public policy or public awareness campaign would you like to see to help turn this around?
Oh, there's many. There's one of that is releasing all of the expungements, all the problems that the women have had. And I think that Wisconsin does have that law where many of them are arrested for prostitution and have felonies and later in life can't get jobs or housing. And they'll actually expunge that, which is fantastic. There's a safe harbor law that we have in Ohio that says you cannot arrest a child, someone under 18, for prostitution. And unfortunately, we see that happen all across the country and don't realize that that's really that they're being trafficked. They're not a criminal. In Michigan, they passed a law with my name on it, removing the statute of limitations for any child who's ever been trafficked. So that means, you know, if they're 17 years old, they have until the rest of their life to actually go after that person. Because many times these laws are 6 years or 20 years. And believe me, 20 years, even after I turned 17, I still wasn't ready to prosecute them.
Teresa, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your story.
You're welcome. I just also want to mention my book that they can get if they're not able to come tomorrow. I have a TED Talk also, but I have two books out. One is The Slave Across the Street, which is my personal story, and then Slavery in the Land of the Free, and that's a student's guide to learning more about modern-day slavery.
Thank you so much. That was Teresa Flora. She's a human trafficking survivor, author, and victims advocate. She's a keynote speaker at an event tomorrow in Green Bay. A link for that event, which is free, is up on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time.